the most happy and kept very long in this land, see. Didn't even bother filling the cavity.
Of Thunderbird Radio Howl, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This show is now Funk My Life because we are now at the 11th hour of this Thursday. So I am your host, Ochre, and this is a show where we kind of listen to sampled and remixed soul, funk, reggae, hip hop, swing, anything goes that falls under the this sort of like groove music umbrella. And speaking of groovy music, well, last week I said I'd play this track and we didn't have time for it. So this is Unregistered People with the track Sweet Butter, and I was saying this is the track I couldn't find much information on. There still is not really any sort of description, but Unregistered People have released a second track, so it does look like it is one of the side projects of Leon DJ. He's this producer and DJ from Greece, and usually he does this like clubby disco feel remix dance music, whereas this is more of a loungy soulful jazz. So check this out.
Great, 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 great There's still time to submit to CITR's Shindig 2011. Shindig is CITR's annual Battle of the Bands competition. All styles are welcome, whether you're a solo country crooner or a 10-piece punk philharmonic. Past participants include The Organ, 3 Inches of Blood, Japan Droids, and They Shoot Horses, Don't They? To enter, send a minimum 3-song demo of original material and your contact information to shindig.submissions@gmail.com by August 12th. Or, do it the old-fashioned way and put everything in an envelope directed to Shindig 2011, care of CITR Radio, 233-6138 Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1. Learn more at CITR.ca. Don't be shy. Submit for Shindig 2011. Rising up,
back on the street. Welcome back to Funk My Life on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver. And that five-song set started things off with Unregistered People's track, Sweet Butter. The second track was George Benson's This Masquerade. And George Benson is a jazz, funk, R&B, and soul musician from Pittsburgh, best known for his time in the 1960s and 1970s. But that was a remix done by Nightmares on Wax. And that's the remix of George Benson's triple platinum album opener. It's a track called... Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's an album called Breezin, and Nightmares on Wax is this UK producer who does this kind of hip-hop style of remixing. The third track is from Herbs and Q-Tex. That's from the album Breaks of Dawn, released back in 2002, and the track is called Up and Down. Now, Herbs and Q-Tex are basically they're loop magicians. They're two hip-hop DJs and producers from Vienna, of all places, who, you know, sample soul, like American style soul, and produce it as a hip hop track. And like as is the case for many European and Japanese hip hop producers, they incorporate a very funky style to their looped hip hop by taking in things like jazz and soul. And speaking of that kind of looped hip hop, jazz and soul sampling, the track after that, that very, very intense dubstepy sound, the wobbling bass, with the wobbling bass, is Mr. Pretty Lights. So that's an American duo, Pretty Lights, and that's off of their 2010 EP, Spilling Over Every Side, with the track High School Art Class. And that last one, it's a bit of a down-tempo chiller, as those in the industry would call it. They are Della Dapp, and that track is called Star Najengo, and they're an electronic gypsy jazz group from Austria, and most of the members are also from Eastern Europe, including the Czech Republic, Serbia, Bosnia, and Herzegovina, and Russia. So, authentic Eastern European descendants of gypsy jazz music styles. It's a very interesting little collective there. Now, tonight, usually what we would do is play a track and then look at its degrees of separation to a predating vintage track. However, tonight we're going to probably try something a little bit different. So, the London riots happened this past weekend, and it kind of bodes ill for the 2012 Olympics there. So, one of my favorite groups is Massive Attack, and they released a statement regarding the London riots yesterday. So they say, in context with the complicit support of the government, the banks looted the nation's wealth while destroying countless small businesses and brought the whole economy to its knees in a covert, clean manner rather like organized crime. Our reaction was to march and wave banners and then bail them out. These kids would have to riot and steal every night for a year to run up a bill equivalent to the value of unpaid taxes big business has avoided out of the economy this year alone. They may not articulate their grievances like the politicians that condemn them, but this is absolutely political. As for the mindless violence, quote-unquote, is there anything more mindless than the British taxpayer quietly paying back the debts of others while contributing bullets to conflicts that we have absolutely no understanding of? It's mad, sad, and scary when we have to take to the streets to defend our homes and businesses from angry, thieving kids. But where are the police, and what justice is ever done when the mob is dressed in pinstripe? End quote. The big silly argument is between whether the London riots have any protest value or not. And of course the government is saying it's thugs who are looting the store for the sake of greed. And I suppose that's kind of correct. A thug looting a store is very unlikely to be telling him or herself, "I'm doing this to bring down an unjust economic wall that separates the poor from ever having the same opportunities to make it, or to, you know, try to dismantle the corrupt police body." A thug loots really for a cathartic release, and of course to get goods that he or she can't realistically or conveniently own otherwise. Where the politics do exist is the fact that London, a first world nation's capital, has that rampant of a poor population who would so readily turn to crime. It's the fact that it's happening in London, and that demographic is largely youth of colored skin, and the fact that it spreads so quickly is highly, highly political. And you can try to pinpoint individual cuts in, say, social programs or look at the unemployment or anything else, and it won't, I feel, give you many answers. The fact that it happened in London but didn't happen in another country with, say, equally terrible youth unemployment or socially apathetic government, I think speaks volume for the fact that it is political and revolves around the past 10 years of the British government's, you know, economic and social policies. And the one thing that bothers me is how much the media and the government, both overseas and here, tend to dehumanize these people as thugs. And this is where we look at a riot that almost happened many years ago in 1968. Martin Luther King Jr. was just shot, and almost all major American cities were rioting. And Boston was to host a concert where young black men were to gather in the downtown core, and one former thug saved it from burning down. James Brown was born in South Carolina in 1933 to Susie Brown and Joseph Joe Gardner. Although he's known as an African-American, he was part Apache thanks to his father and also had Asian heritage. As a young child, the family lived in extreme poverty in South Carolina, which at the time was a very impoverished town that they lived in. And when Brown was only 2 years old, his parents separated after his mother left his father for another man. And Brown spent the next 4 years with his dad and his dad's girlfriends until he was 6 years old, in which case they all moved to Georgia. There, his father wanted to get rid of him, so he went off to live with an aunt who ran a brothel. So young James Brown never had a functional family and was dealt really pitiful cards in his early life. Despite having family, he spent his youth on his own, hanging out on the streets and hustling to get by. Inevitably, he drops out of school in the seventh grade. Brown would earn money by shining shoes, sweeping floors, selling and trading old stamps, washing cars and dishes, and most importantly for his future, singing in talent contests. Brown would also perform buck dances for change to entertain military troops from Camp Gordon at the start of World War II as their convoys traveled over a canal bridge just near his aunt's home, which was the brothel that he grew up in. Brown was inspired to become an entertainer after watching Louis Jordan, a jazz and R&B singer during the 1940s, perform on a short film. Normally, performers are usually in their teens before they really feel inspired to create music. For Brown, he had already learned instruments by the age of 11. And when Brown won an amateur night contest at the Lenox Theater for singing So Long, he, on his momentum, started a trio called Cremona, in which he played piano, drums, and sang. So as an adolescent, Brown practiced his hustling, his music, and his skills in crime. And because of his poverty, Brown would steal clothes for his wardrobe and this escalated when he began stealing automobile parts, which is really too bad because you had this 11-year-old performer who could play the piano, who could play the guitar, sang like an angel, and set his drums, could put together a band, was performing for live audiences, and when he got into petty thievery, he was arrested and sentenced to 8 to 18 years in prison. 8 to 18 years is a very long time. And while in prison, he formed a gospel quartet, earning the name Music Box from his fellow inmates. And he claimed that gospel music helped him keep his sanity. And this is a theme that we will see endlessly with musicians. During this time, he met Bobby Bird, a musician with whom he would have a very long-lasting professional relationship. As a result of their friendship, Bird's family helped Brown secure an early release after serving only 3 years of his sentence. Brown then settled in Georgia, where he lived with Bobby Bird's family, and worked at a car dealership while immersing himself in gospel music in the after hours. And after stints as a boxer and a baseball pitcher in semi-professional baseball. So this guy's multi-talented. And that only came to an end when he had a leg injury. James Brown turned his energy towards music and partnered with Bobby Bird. During the late 1960s and early 1970s, James Brown was renowned for his social activism. For instance, in 1966, he released a single, Don't Be a Dropout, as a lesson to youth, especially from the ghettos. In addition to giving speeches and advocating for the importance of education, and this is coming from someone who dropped out in the seventh grade. On April 4th, 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, along with the hope for a peaceful resolution to the civil rights movement, and major American cities were burning from violent riots from a predominantly black youth. So, James Brown is to perform the day after this assassination in downtown Boston. And the surrounding residential areas that are that where most of the blacks live are in riots, and there are fires present in surrounding areas. Downtown Boston is largely intact. Although many of Boston's city councilors wanted to enforce a strong police presence and cancel the concert, Mayor Kevin White was convinced to let it happen and prevented the Boston police from cracking down on minor violence and protests. Also, Mayor White arranged to have Brown's performance broadcast multiple times on Boston's public television station, WGBH, while keeping many potential rioters off the streets, watching the concert for free. Brown demanded money for, quote, gate fees, which is the compensation for lost ticket sales due to the concert being shown for free. And Mayor White successfully came up with the money for Brown's gate fee and up to $100,000 for social programs that were in accordance with James Brown's demands. And as the night progressed, the Boston police took up positions all around the stage. Inevitably, excitable black youth started to hop onto the stage, and the Boston police were about to make their move. And just as it looked as the tension was going to burst into violence, at that moment, James Brown takes the microphone and says, paraphrasing because I can't understand his far too quick talk and lo-fi audio quality, wait a minute, they're all right, wait a minute, now we gotta show them young men and young ladies, wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention, wait, this is no way, we are black, don't make us all look bad. Get down now. You make me look very bad because the police step back and you won't go down. No, that's wrong. No. You're not being fair to yourself and to me. Now, I ask the police to step back because I have respect for my own people. That makes sense. Now, we are together, right? And at that, the crowd responds in a hushed cheer, and James goes right into his concert, broadcast on TV for free. The story is documented in a PBS film called The Night James Brown Saved Boston. I highly recommend you go and find a copy, because this is an amazing story. In 1968, the same year, Brown released a single, sorry, an album called Say It Loud. No. Let me try that again. A single set called Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, which was because of pressure from fans to take a stance on the civil rights movement, an issue that he had avoided up until that point. It became an anthem for the civil rights movement. And retrospectively, Brown said about the song, "The song is obsolete now, but it was necessary to teach pride then, and I think the song did a lot of good for a lot of people. People called Black and Proud militant and angry, maybe because of the line about dying on your feet instead of dying on your knees, but really, if you listen to it, it sounds like a children's song. That's why I had children in it, so children who heard it could grow up feeling pride. The song cost me a lot of my crossover audience. The racial makeup at my concerts was mostly Black after that. I don't regret it, though, even if it was misunderstood. The divide of Black music for Black people and Black music for white people is so endlessly fascinating. Last week we were talking about Etta James and how her audience was Black, while Diana Ross, who very much copied Etta James's style, appealed to whites. So you had this former convict who stole parts off of automobiles managing to give an entire demographic hope. And when you give them that sort of direction and hope, it's just amazing the kind of things that you can disarm. That kind of hatred and that kind of frustration can be entirely disarmed. And it's funny that people think a riot isn't political. And anyway, I'm very amused by what's going on and very disappointed as well. And hopefully we can get these sort of messes organized. But anyway, I've talked for far too long. This is Say It Loud, I'm Black, and I am Proud.
You know we can do the fool. You know, we are people too. We like the birds and the bees, but we'd rather die on our feet and keep living on our knees.
That is the voice of someone who never lost hope and gave hope and understanding to an entire generation. Right about now, we only have 10 minutes left, so we'll play a quick PSA. And this PSA is a particularly cool one because I get to set the music for it tomorrow. This is the Nomad Gallery opening.
Nomad Gallery is proud to present opening night at its second location, 196 Kingsway. The night starts at 7 and will feature local and international artists. Say you were there the first time. Go to the opening night of Nomad Gallery's second location, Friday, August 12th, 7 p.m., 196 Kingsway.
So that is only a block away from Kingsway at Broadway. So I hopefully will see people there. If you recognize me, come say hi. And the rest of tonight, with only the 10 minutes we have left, we're going to go into a house set. One that I like quite a bit, including another track from Moto Blanco, who we were talking about last week about after listening to, what is it? Magic was a track that they remix, which was used in the mashup of No Woman No Cry. So we'll basically talk about that right as we have to leave. And before we do, Pierre will come on. Sorry, and after we do, Pierre will come on with Oral Tentacles and he will take you to the morning. So this is Funk My Life. If you like what you've been listening to so far, go to www.funkmylife.com. This is CITR 101.9.
DJ saved my life from a broken heart. Last night I had you on my mind, I couldn't seem to unwind. So I got into my car, I didn't get very far. Oh no. Okay. So I turned on the radio, found out all I needed to know. All day I've been inside a stitch, it's time for me to switch.
I'm going down to the club.
Last night the DJ blew my mind. Last night the DJ came on time. Last night the DJ blew my mind. Last night the DJ came on time.
That take me back to them early 80s, huh? When the heavyweights was around. You know, when dancing was really, really dancing. When you came to the club packed with problems. And you just got on the dance floor and you let them go. You wasn't worried about the next person next to you. It didn't matter what they had on. It didn't matter what they smelled like. It was all about the dance, the party, the DJ, the people, feeling free.